Hey guys, what's up? We are the Story Crafters. My name is Jeff. We have Nicole and Jared with us. Charlie is unfortunately out this episode. We wish him the best. He's not feeling too good, but all the thoughts over to him, bro. How the heck are you guys? It has been an episode since I have been with everybody. Episodes, I think, since I've been with everybody.
Yeah,
I know I missed last episode.
Yes.
And yeah.
We have not been all four together in a very long time.
I know.
It's been a minute. It's been a hot minute.
But
it does feel weird. But it's the realities of life, and it's the season for getting sick, it seems. So what can you do?
That is true. That is true.
Mm-hmm. Take your emergency vitamin C, whatever you swear by. Yeah. Pray to the gods. Everyone listening, it's sick season.
All of them.
Pray the to old your and God.
The old and the new.
Yes.
Or whatever they say in Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
But anyways, I think I remembered how this show still works, so let's go ahead and roll initiative here to see what we've all been up to and things like that. So let's do that.
Once again using my dice provided by the one and only Charlie, the Inked GM. That is less good this time, my guy. The dice is also sick. It's apparently tied to how well Charlie's feeling. So that's a two.
Oh.
Nicole,
what's your roll?
I got maybe the best roll I've gotten ever.
Oh.
No, that's not true, because I got a nat 20 once.
You did.
I got an 18.
Oh.
Wow. Look at you making up for the
initiative roll I've ever done.
Yeah. I think that is. I think so. I got an 11.
There you go.
Nicole, kick us off.
Barely last.
I mean, you're ahead of Charlie, so.
You're ahead of Charlie.
Well, that. Kick a man while he's down. We'll soon, Charlie. Love you.
Yeah, we miss you a lot. We hope you feel good soon. Or now. But if you feel good now, why are you not on here with us? So.
Yeah, that's valid. Now I'm mad, actually. Now I'm upset. So
yeah, you better not feel good now, Charlie. You better feel good later.
Yeah.
In 5 minutes, it'll be acceptable, but.
Yeah. All right. What have I been up to? What have I been up to? So it was recently Halloween, and I ended up doing a little impromptu crafting. Not necessarily for D&D, but I used my DMing skills and my crafting skills to make a shepherd staff for my daughter, who was being little Bo Peep at a school performance on the day before Halloween. So kind of impressed myself with that last minute craft.
That's fun.
I did share it on Instagram, so if you haven't seen it, you could go see it. Basically, it was like packing paper and a broomstick and duct tape. And then I made it look really nice. And she was like, but it's supposed to be blue. Why is the shepherd's staff blue? I don't know. But luckily, I have a bunch of primer and paint. So then we painted it blue.
As one does.
You know what? She was very proud of it, and I feel like it gave her that little extra confidence in her performance. So we're going to call that a win.
Something, there is something about having a prop in your hand that really just like sells the character in your mind, you know?
Yes. I will say in the kindergarten class, I counted at least 6 Little Bo Peep / Little Miss Muffet looking characters, and she was the only one with a staff, so.
No big deal. Just the coolest kid on stage. It's whatever.
I mean, I think so, but I'm probably biased. Also did some hairstyling, hair dyeing, because for actual Halloween, my daughter was incredibly unique and went as one of the K-pop Demon Hunters girls. So that was fun. Her and
phenomenon sweeping the nation.
Yes.
The globe, perhaps.
Perhaps the globe. I don't know. We saw a bunch of Huntrix girls out trick-or-treating, which was really fun for all of them because they'd be like, oh, Huntrix girls. I'm like, okay, that's cute. Yeah, Halloween. That was fun. Oh, some new book news. So I shared last time that all the Kickstarter rewards are out. I think as of today, which is the beginning of November, I still have a few international folks that are, there it is. Oh, that makes me so happy. Yeah, a few people internationally are waiting for their deliveries because international mail is a riot. But I think all my U.S. people have their products, as Jared just so nicely showed off his copy. And I can say that I am now in stock. My books are in stock in a few local stores in the Austin area, which is where I live.
That today.
That's exciting. So
that's super cool to like see my book on a shelf in a store. That's really neat.
That's so cool.
There he is. There's Carl.
Yeah.
Oh man. When I got mine, my mom was like, you have a package? And I was like, okay, cool. She's like, I think it's a book. And I was like, you should have led with that. And so Eli and I read it. He loved it. Oh my God. He was like, it was so that we were, he's like, wait, I remember this. And like, as we were going through the book, cause he was in the room with me as I was doing the voices for Talon. Mm-hmm. And so he was like, wait, I remember this. And as it was keeping going, he was like, oh no, I remember this next part. Oh wait, it's okay. I remember. And then he goes, wait, what was my line at the end? and then he was like,
the emotional roller coaster.
He was like, oh yeah. And he's like, you want to say it? He was like, yeah. This is like, let's play again. And I was like, oh, like, oh my God. It's so good. It's so good. We were going to start the coloring book today too, but the little dude just wanted to cuddle up in his bed again. But yeah. That's exciting. I'm so sorry to cut you off there, but I was like, wait, I had to say something. And it's been far too long since I've talked to you guys on virtually like this. So that was vomit. I'm sorry.
I love it. I feel like that kind of story is like what's keeping me going right now as far as like creatively and stuff, is just hearing about people being like, oh, I got the book and I read it with my kid and they liked it. And mm-hmm. I mean, that was the whole point of doing it in the first place. So I will take all of the stories. I love them so much. They make my heart happy.
Yes.
And seeing my book on shelves makes me happy. And oh, and I registered for, I guess it's my first. Is it my first convention that I'm vending at? I've done a few like local markets, but I think it's the first like actual gaming convention that I'm going to be a vendor at, which is Pelicon, which happens.
That's a bird.
Yeah, it's. Yes, it's close to like Galveston. Houston area, Texas coast. Don't recommend it for the beach. Don't come for the beach. Come for the convention. But yeah, I will be there in May of 2025. And I'll probably have a few other places between now and then. I'm definitely going to try to get a spot at IckyCon in January, which is in Austin as well.
For those listening in the future and in the past, Nicole was at whatever this was, May of 2025. She meant 2026, I think.
Oh gosh. I'm going back to May.
We have to go back. You're the future.
That would be really awkward though, to show up and realize that your book isn't actually published yet, and then you'd show up empty handed and you'd be like, empty-handed? Well,
would not be the first booth that I ran empty-handed. I have played that game before, but yes. Yeah, that would be interesting.
Time is soup. So one year, one May. guess everybody just has to go to all of them just from here on out, just to be certain that they don't miss you.
Yeah, what year is it? I'm not sure, but yes, May of 2026. Man, now I need to go back and check my Instagram post, because I bet I said 2025 on Instagram too. Dang it. Oh, well. Yeah, next May.
Oh, well.
Whenever May comes around next, whatever year that may be, I will be near Galveston at Pelican.
Not Pelican.
No.
Sorry.
Not even Pelican. Pelican.
Pelican. Pelican. Pelican. Also, even though the name is a little bit weird, the organizers that I have talked to are so impressive. Like they have really, like, I just went kind of like manic about a month ago and just applied to Vend at a ton of different cons, and the lack of response or the lack of professionalism in response from the organizers of different cons, which will not be named, have turned me off from being a vendor there. And these people with Pelican did the exact opposite. Like, they got back to me really fast. They were really kind and like professional and helpful. And that is the kind of people I want to work with. So makes a big difference.
That's super cool.
Yeah. People you work with wisely.
I think that's about it. What about you, Jeff? What's been going on with you since BergQuest, I think, is the last time our listeners heard from you?
Yeah.
And was that BergQuest was awesome. 4 or 25?
Who knows? Who knows, really?
No, that was awesome. You should definitely go and listen to that episode, because it was super cool. Especially, that was my first convention ever. And that was really fun. I had a good time. Adam was great setting that up. Everybody that was working there was fantastic. William and Mary, the students they had running around, they were fantastic. So yeah, 10 out of 10 will do again. So hopefully with some more stuff for next time. So, but I've been busy at work. And it's not slowing down, so that's fun.
Work.
But it's okay. It's okay. We kind of knew what we signed up for, but we're being taken advantage of, but it's okay. It's fine. It's fine. At least my department is, anyways. But it's okay. I have been pretty frequently playing D&D again, which has been nice. I'm yet to play in Charlie's game. Every time he hosts a game, I'm good, and then I get scheduled for work. I'm like, dang it.
Dang it!
Like, come on, guys. But, no, my players are almost done the first leg of the campaign. So, like, they're almost done, like, act one of the campaign. And so was crafting, actually, right before the show. I built this, this, like, ledge. It's like a rooftop type thing that's at the top of this ruins. Mm-hmm. That, I cut into four sections, and they all piece together. And then, so they're going to be on that fighting. But during a second phase of the fight, it's going to explode. And so it breaks into four different sections. And I'm going to take some foam and, or not foam, but like fluff, and spray paint it like purple and silver and black and swirl it all around and stuff like that. So it looks like it's kind of in like the clouds and stuff. So this fight is, they go through this portal that'll take them what they think is up to the very top, but it'll actually take them into this place in my world called the Void, the Ethereal Void, or the Eternal Void, or something like that. I forget what it is. It's a void something.
It's a void.
It's a void.
Let's avoid the void.
Sounds like,
which is cool.
Yeah, I was saying, sounds like a good place to avoid.
Yes. Anyways,
daylight savings just happened. We are not okay. We are all a little bit off our rockers today.
Yeah.
This is just how I am all the time.
the big painting.
I don't think
project,
I can justify it.
I finished my. For people that follow me on Instagram, they've been seeing a lot of like Lord of the Rings posts. I finished my Rohan army. So it's 100% done, and I'm very happy about that, because, dear God, why the heck, if any Games Workshop employee listens to this for some dumb reason, why the heck are your models 19 pieces for a mini that's the size of a D&D mini? Yeah. Why is a head in 2 pieces, Games Workshop? Why? Tell me why. It's driving me nuts.
Really makes you want it. It's they really the make point, you want to. You have to want it. To.
I bought the starter box, and I haven't even begun to build the other half, because I'm just like, I'm not doing it. Mm-hmm. I'm not doing it. These models are this big.
Why? Yeah.
So then I started painting another like regular like Games Workshop styled mini. And I was like, I have so much real estate to work with. Like, I've been using like size 1 brushes for
it's
the past
so big.
Month. I went to a size 4 and I'm like, the world is my oyster.
Yeah. Yes. So funny.
I feel that.
Yeah, no, that's kind of what I've been doing. It's just progressing through life, fending off being sick. You can kind of hear it. I'm a little stuffy, but I mean, trying to keep the nerd train going too. So, I actually am doing a room tour on my new room. Now that I kind of have like a semi.
Yeah, that's exciting.
I think this one's not going anywhere anytime soon. So,
I feel like you've been teasing that for like. 6 episodes.
This one is kind of like the okay. I like where it's at, and I think it's worthy of showing.
I love a room tour. Anybody listening, if you have a cool crafting or D&D room, do a tour. I want to watch it. Do that for me, and all the other people who also enjoy that. It's the coolest thing ever. Please do that.
I will watch a room tour like the whole way through.
Yeah, probably multiple times, and I'll be pausing and be like, oh my god, what do they have going on back here in this little nook and fanny? And I particularly noticed you didn't open that one drawer, and I want to know what's in it now.
So. I actually made an adjustment to it yesterday. I had some lights that I didn't like. I was like, eh, they throw off the feng shui.
The feng shui.
And I gotta order a couple other lights too, but and some sound treatment stuff in it, but...
How many firelights, fables, candles?
You don't tour soon or dream.
I just had a stroke. What?
Jared first. Jared, go first. We just talked over each other.
I said, no pressure, but if you don't do a room tour soon, I'll scream.
There.
Don't ask for much. I just want everything as it pops into my head.
And I would like to know how many firelights, fables, candles are on display in your room tour.
That could be a mini game. Don't mention it. Just we have to count them. And as it goes by, whoever comments the right amount, you know. I don't
That's
know what the
actually
prize is.
That
doesn't have to be a prize, but just it's a mini game.
One of them has actually been reused, so you can still tell it says Firelight Fables on it, but if you spot it, it'll be a good find.
Okay, that one's
I already know what it is.
Yeah,
I already know where to look, baby.
I'm so curious.
Don't worry about
it. What you been doing, dude? You teased me.
Apparently,
you teased me when you and I were just talking earlier. What the heck was that? Tell me about that.
I teased this last episode, and frankly, I've barely progressed, but this is a lighthouse, or in the process of being a lighthouse. It's a tall guy.
It has progressed.
I mean, that's...
It
that's
has definitely progressed.
So it's a big guy. It's a big fella. And I'm very excited about it. It's going to have a working light. I also haven't really progressed on the little tugboat / sailboat thing that I also teased. Very excited about it. These are all things that I intend to have, you know, usable for other things, but they will all ideally be for my new family's D&D that I'm preparing, Tales of Harborlight, which is going to be a super cozy, fun seaside adventure that I talked about briefly in the last one, so we won't go over all of that again, as not much has really changed. Beyond that, I did run a session of D&D since the last time I recorded, which I think I briefly talked about was going to happen, but it was great. It was one of the few episodes, sessions of my Abyssal Tide world that we didn't have combat. And it's always interesting when we don't hit combat, because I never know if my players are going to be like, that was great, or be like, you know, hey, we kind of wanted more, you know, not that they really ever say that, but you know, we all enjoy combat. And it was incredible. They sailed into a fog and they ended up at this cabin up on a cliff that in which resided a deity of some sort. They never really bothered to ask the name, so they still don't really know who it was. And frankly, I'll leave that a mystery because it'll probably come back around. And but it was incredible. It was so fun to RP and just kind of have it flow. And it felt very high stakes for them that it was stakes, which was they were walking on eggs all the time, which is fun to make your players sweat.
Yeah.
So it was great. I had a lot of fun. And it was fun too. We got to end on a cliffhanger. Basically, it's a homebrew monster that is inspired by cicadas. And they were beginning to descend and swarm the players as the session ended. And little do they know, because that should happen before this comes out and they listen, those cicadas are going to land and then shed their exoskeleton and transform into something even bigger and nastier, which is exciting for me. And it's disgusting and I hate it. And I love it. So, I'm excited to continue with that. Your faces are great.
For those wondering, the follow-up episode will be Nicole's professional opinion on the heck Jared just created and who hurt him.
Right.
There will be, you know, a deep, deep diagnosis.
Yeah, this does sound like trauma response, Jared.
That is going to be a whole episode in itself. I'll be honest, this is what happens when I go outside. Summer, I literally walked outside a tree and I'm like, look, a cicada shell. And then as I'm holding the shell of this, you know, insect in my hand, I'm like, that would make a really freaking cool and terrifying monster, especially when you scale it up to be like the same size as a human. And so it's not my fault. It's nature's fault.
Okay.
So
you just
inspiration surrounds us. Yeah.
You just triggered a core memory of mine as a crafter, because I was sure. this was in the COVID timeframe. So let's all put on our COVID hats again, real quick.
And our
masks.
Right. Masks. Yeah. Put on your COVID masks. And this was someone did something similar to this, but crafted a cicada, but used an actual cicada, like a dead cicada shell, like put it in like a resin. This was in Reddit. If I can find the picture, I'll send it to you guys. But like encased it in resin so it wouldn't break, and then added like a bunch of like different stuff to it. But the model itself was a legit cicada. It's like, ooh.
Yeah.
That I'm not as much into. Kudos. That sounds awesome. I'm not going to do that. That feels like actually Nicole would have to spend an episode trying to pick my brain about what went wrong. And I don't think anybody wants to listen to that.
No, I think that.
Anyway.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Anyway, I guess maybe I should apologize to my players, even though they've probably felt worse things. But so anyway, I guess in summation, to bring it back around, let nature inspire you, because it's really cool. And there's already so many really cool creatures in D&D, but I'm pretty excited to use these ones. So I can't even remember what I named them, but it's even like the scientific name for a cicada and something that sheds its exoskeleton. So I went really nerdy with it, and I'm unashamed. I'm proud of myself. So
it's
anyway,
like beautiful, and terrible, awesome. And traumatizing all at the same time. Yeah.
Right,
which is like nature. Yeah.
I mean, and frankly, I don't know. Things. Yeah, I mean, I don't know how it is where you guys live, but in summertime here, cicadas are just like screaming all summer long for like 2 months straight. I think that's true many places.
That's it. Two. That's it.
Well, it depends. Two? Depends how much they like. I'm moving on. depends.
Mine vacation. So anyway, like from like November to January, then I'm like, gonna go home.
I have the benefit of it getting very cold here. Speaking of which, supposed to snow here Monday, so yay about that. Moving on.
I can't move on yet because this is reminding me of a t-shirt that I saw that now I need to go find again because I want it. And it was like something about like cicada something, but then it was like shed the your former self and scream all summer. And
it's incredible.
It was really good when I think I just maybe butchered it a little bit. I think it's even better than what I just said, but now I need to go find it again because this is just like reinvigorating my need for this t-shirt and or sticker or mug. I'll take it all, really.
You know what's really what's really funny about that? Like, you may have butchered that saying, but you know what's like really funny and what you can't butcher? Is using code StoryCrafters for 15% off your order at firelightfables.com, where you can get 15% off your fantasy candles, which will inspire scents and bring your table to an infinite level of immersion as you light these candles with their wood wick, very satisfying to your ear holes.
Yeah. More so than the screams of cicadas, might I add.
More so than the screams of cicadas.
Yes.
That is something you can't butcher. So once again, use code StoryCrafters for 15% off your order. Yeah.
What a great segue.
I'm always trying to find those like, wait, where can I do it? Where can I do it? Where can I do it?
Oh, man. My guy.
Love it.
Okay, lore, shall we?
We
shall
do the thing.
So I don't know what date exactly this episode's coming out, but I don't know if you guys watch Stranger Things, but they just recently released a trailer for the final season of Stranger Things, and it looks incredible.
Yes.
So, piggybacking off of that, I decided that tonight we're going to talk about Vecna.
Let's go.
Vecna, the Whispered One.
Ooh.
Across countless worlds and countless ages, one name is whispered in fear by wizards and priests alike. Vecna, the Arch-Lich, the Whispered One, the Maimed God. His story begins not as a deity, but as a mortal man. A prodigy of necromancy whose hunger for knowledge outgrew both the bounds of mortality and morality. Born into an age of cruelty, Vecna sought power not to save his people, but to master death itself. Through forbidden study and terrible sacrifice, he achieved lichdom, transforming his decaying flesh into undying purpose. But even immortality was not enough. Vecna's ambition reached beyond the material plane. He desired godhood. His empire rose from the ashes of nations, and his name became synonymous with secrecy and undeath. It was said that he knew every whisper uttered in the dark, every betrayal born in shadow. Yet, even the greatest tyrant can be undone from within. His most trusted lieutenant, Cass the Bloody-Handed, wielded the Sword of Cass, turned on his master. Their battle shattered Vecna's empire and left the Lich destroyed, or so it seemed. Only his left hand and eye remained, still pulsing with divine Alice. These relics, the Eye of Vecna and the Hand of Vecna, became some of the most infamous artifacts in all of D&D lore. To attune to one is to gain immense power, but at a terrible price. The host must sacrifice their own eye or hand and risk becoming a vessel for Vecna's will. Though through these relics his influence endures, corrupting those foolish enough to believe they can master him. Every time a mortal succumbs to their lure, Vecna inches closer to full resurrection. Across editions and settings, Vecna's shadow has lingered. In Greyhawk, he rose from lich to godhood, taking his place among the pantheon of deceit and secrets. In Ravenloft, he was imprisoned within the dread realm of Cavictus, his schemes echoing across the mists. And in the world of the Forgotten Realms, cults devoted to his worship whisper prayers that promise knowledge and eternity. His titles: the Whispered One, the Archmage of Secrets, the Lord of the Rotting Tower. Each speak to his endless obsession with control and concealment. To encounter Vecna is not merely to face a villain. It is to confront the very idea of forbidden knowledge, the truth that some things should never be known. For where there is a secret, there is a Vecna. Where there is ambition without conscience, there is his hand at work. And though gods may banish him and heroes may destroy his phylacteries, the Whispered One is patient. After all, death has never been a problem for him. And that is Vecna.
I have like goosebumps. Ooh.
Strictly D&D lore. Whoa. There. Tried to keep any Stranger Things twists and turns out of it, as it is separate but obviously inspired and taken from that source material. Vecna's a bad dude.
Yeah. Ooh.
Do we get the Stranger Things topics out of the way now, or do we? Because I know we all want to talk about them in Stranger Things. Let's be real. D&D is cool and they did a great job, but Stranger Things has nailed Vecna. Let's be real.
Nailed it. One of the best on-screen villains we've had in a long time. Spoiler free. No.
I guess no. I need to watch spoiler it.
Watch Stranger Things. It is genuinely incredible.
I'm sorry.
Final season out this year, and all it's right. It's going to be a good one.
All right, hang on. No spoilers. We're going to be talking about Vecna, but there is no spoilers for Stranger Things. So if you do want to do that, go ahead and shoot us some messages on Instagram, because I love talking about Stranger Things. I know Jared does. Nicole hasn't watched it. So, yeah.
I can't confirm this at this very moment, but I feel like Charlie for sure is super into
Charlie
Stranger Things.
Charlie is 1,000% in on Stranger Things. Yeah.
And Nicole soon will be.
Yeah, you have.
Y'all might convince me. I don't know.
It's so good.
It's so good.
Yeah,
I'm not totally against watching it. It does look good. It looks a little creepy for what I usually watch. Like jump scares. Yeah. That's like really not my thing.
There are. Far as a regular TV show goes, it does kind of. It does err on the creep. It gets progressively creepier too.
Oh, darn.
But you always, I think it is one that tends to give resolution, though. You're not typically left feeling with the, like, gross, icky, you know.
No.
Anyway, okay. Stranger Things is incredible.
Maybe I'll watch it in the daylight.
But most of the episodes are like, they'll do like a suspenseful episode that ends on a good cliffhanger that you're like, oh no. Yeah. And then the following episode is pretty like that they resolve whatever the thing is, and then it kind of ends on okay, they're okay for now.
Yeah, we're doing all right.
You know, Vecna, from a D&D perspective, besides Critical Role taking it and, you know, having freaking Archon the Cruel, you know, doing his thing in Critical Role, Have either of you guys, Nicole, I'd be shocked if you threw Vecna at a kid. I'd kind of be like super happy if you did, though. Like, that'd be
Who
awesome.
Are you, the Duffer Brothers?
Yeah, I am.
Spider-Man, here's Thanos.
Right. Yeah, no.
I also, so Vecna is on my short list of like one day. Oh, good Lord. The Ravenloft. I just lost the vampire's name. The main... Who's the main vampire?
Oh, my God.
Okay, well, I don't feel so bad. Anyway, on my short list...
Strahd.
Yes, thank you, Strahd. And, like, a very small select other few are, like, on my... They'd be my infinity stones that I'd want to gather of like one day I want to be able to RP.
Ooh. Oh, if you did like the Sinister like, 7 of D&D villains.
Oh, well, that would be pretty sweet too, actually. That's a great idea.
That would be cool.
We'll loop back around to that.
Can that be the Story Crafters campaign that we do?
Oh my God. All right, well, let's put a pin in that, and we'll do back to that, because that's an incredible idea. Anyway, Ooh. Vecna just makes me want to write better villains in my homebrew world now.
Yeah.
My main bad guy, Malachor Darktide, who my players have encountered several times, is heavily inspired by Davy Jones. But I've pulled a lot from name? Other... Malachor Darktide, who, I want to be clear... was written like 3 years ago.
Okay, hang on, wait. I was gonna say, I was like, wait.
Because your guy's Malik, right?
Malachar.
Yeah, Malachar, whatever. Malachar, hey, great minds.
Malachor, are they brothers? Yeah, are they
potato,
friends?
Potato,
I don't know.
You know?
Did I just subconsciously potato, like know because you've talked about him before? Be like, that's
it's
a cool
possible,
name.
But I mean, I don't own the name. That's never.
Okay, we'll have to multiverse our worlds.
Oh yeah.
Anyways,
anyway,
I'm sorry to keep cutting you off. I'm sorry.
You're fine. Characters like Vecna just make me want to write deeper and more terrifying villains that don't even necessarily have to be present for you to feel their presence. You know, I love the idea of wherever there is secrets, wherever there is shadow, there is Vecna. Like, that is what I want, you know. Oof. My villain, I've worked hard to be like, wherever there is ocean, like, there is that potential impending doom of, you know... The Shadowed Maw is the name of Malachor Darktide's ship. And it's like, you know, whenever there's mist and fog, you never know if the Shadowed Maw is going to emerge from it. And I love that looming sense of terror that you can kind of just have dangling over a story, that you can be touching on all these different things, but to still kind of have that. And I think with Vecna too, it's really fun to have in most stories that are canon, at least, his main arc has kind of passed. You know, we know that he was defeated, quote unquote, and you have the hand and the eye. And I think that's a really cool concept of taking that and shifting it and twisting it. Like, what a great opener for a homebrew world of having these remnants of this lich or god, you know, whatever, that are kind of more common, but still touted as these incredible artifacts, you know, and to be able to build off of that, you know, maybe the first entire story arc of your campaign is just building to getting this phylactery, you know, that eventually becomes this bigger and bigger thing. And Vecna's pretty awesome.
That's really cool lore. I like that. I probably know the least about Vecna coming into this conversation, but like, I'm hyped about him now.
He's super cool. He is like one of those, like, he's a madman, but like, you're also kind of like, man, I super dig your vibe though. Like,
it's very Thanos-esque in the like
the baddie you love.
clearly yeah. You're horrible. Like, you're wrong, full stop. But like,
yeah,
you know, respect. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I did. He was the main influence of my Christmas-themed one-shot last year, where his hand was being transported through the Yawning Portal to basically kind of like go back into holding, essentially. And he had, I had taken basically, there was a Christmas themed beginning and stuff like that, but they're, the players had to stop the, kind of like the whatever the Mind Flayers gaggle is called.
So
it took place in there, and they ended up having a bag of holding. They ended up having a bag of holding, and my buddy was like, "Oh, I put his hand in the bag of holding. I'm gonna jump off the because it was in the yawning port. He's like, I'm gonna jump off the balcony," and he was like, "This is the actual yawning portal, right?" I was like, "For lack there of a better term for a one shot, yeah, sure." It's like, "All right, cool." I let go of the bag of holding, and as I do, I slice it, which causes it to explode. And I was like, so the bag of holding he just dropped it and exploded it in the well that goes to the realm of the Mad Mage. So now Vecna's hand in my world is in.
That's awesome.
The realm of the Mad Mage.
You and I handle Christmas one shots drastically different, because I'm pretty sure the last Christmas one shot I ran, they fought gingerbread men.
That's gonna be my next one. That's my next one. My next one.
Yeah, that.
That's my next one.
It could be the same thing, but Vecna is just a gingerbread man, and you know his hand is just kind of broken off. And
it was more Christmas themed. There was a lot more Christmas theme to it. That was just the overarching. Here's the bad guy plot.
It sounds about as Christmassy as like Die Hard.
Die Hard is a Christmas movie.
That's the impression that I get.
I feel like we need to make a poll around Christmas time.
Mm-hmm.
I need to know where Charlie lands, because I still don't know where I come down. Die Hard's a great movie, but anyway, good Lord, we're getting so distracted.
You're even on the show tonight, and we're getting distracted.
I know, good Lord. It's because whenever one of the four is not here, we can't stay on task. Anyway, to wrap up the lore section, I would just encourage anyone to dive into some of these big touted villains throughout D&D, because they're awesome, and whether you're using them or creating your own villains, there is so much to pull from there. You know, I think oftentimes it's easy to go to villains like Thanos or Darth Vader or, you know, what have you, when we're writing our villains.
Mm-hmm.
And go into D&D lore, man. It's incredible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And a lot of it's free too.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Forgotten Realms wiki is really great.
Yeah.
And even on D&D Indeed. Beyond, they also have like their own stuff too that you can see. Yeah. And like the basic rules and stuff. But there's lore in there too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah. Yeah. Anybody else have anything on the Dark Lord Vecna? Cool. How do y'all design dungeons? Nicole, how do you do it?
Well,
that's our topic today, guys.
Dungeon. Yeah, dungeon. Our topic today is dungeon design, which this is one I really would actually like to hear from listeners about too, because I feel like this is a thing that maybe a lot of people do the same, but also put different twists on it. So, I'm interested in some community feedback from this. If anybody wants to chime in the comments or send us an email or something about how you design dungeons.
And next episode, I'm going to have some, if you guys actually do comment or send us any messages, we can talk about them on the next episode too.
Oh yeah. Heck yeah.
So yeah, you get a little shout out if you comment and get active. Yeah.
Nicole,
do it. Let's do it.
Do it. Okay. So I feel like I have two main answers to this. One is the lazy answer. And then one is the I actually kind of thought about this and planned it out answer. So lazy answer first, because that one gets a little bit more time and use in my house. So a lot of times when I am planning out a dungeon, I like to use map tiles that are already made and that I already have, usually filched from other board games. that are not D&D related at all. I have a huge collection of the tiles from the Mansions of Madness second edition game. If you haven't played it, it's amazing. The tiles are epic and creepy and lovely, and I use them all the time in my D&D games. So the lazy answer is that I just sort through the stuff that I already have, and I'm like, oh, that looks cool. Oh, that could be fun. Oh, we could put a little trap thing there. This would be a great place for the baddie to stand on this altar. And I just kind of piece it together with what I have. That is often how my dungeons get created. That's the lazy answer. The more complex answer, which is not actually that complex at all, is that I am a big fan of the like five room dungeon kind of model, which, you know, lots of different people have talked about. I think I ended up hearing about it first from maybe like Gnome Stew or some other D&D blog. But if you don't know, the basic model is five rooms or five different areas, the entrance, some kind of puzzle or like role-playing challenge that people have to do, the some kind of like diversion, you went the wrong way, this isn't actually the thing, it's this other thing that maybe hurts you or provides another challenge. Fourth room is like the climax, the bad guy you fight, whatever. And then fifth room is like your treasure room, right? Your reward, your revelation from getting through room four, which was the bad thing that you had to do, usually a fight. So I use that a lot when I'm actually planning out a dungeon, is that kind of like basic five room structure. And I saw some things really early on in DMing about how to arrange those five different areas in like non-sequential order and different arrangements for them. And for some reason that really stuck with me. So instead of like, I think the straight one through five is called like railroad or something like that. So instead of doing that, like kind of thinking of more how dungeons tend to be in video games, where it's kind of like, okay, well, you can go left or right. And if you go that way, then maybe this actually ends up connecting back to this thing. And so I do a lot of those, I don't know, I guess mixed up five room dungeons is what I would call them, but keeping that same kind of structure of like, okay, there's always at least one puzzle type room, there's always at least one like big fight type room, just to kind of map it out in my own mind. And luckily my players are pretty young and easily entertained, so that shit never gets boring for them. They're like, oh, another puzzle! Cool! This is great! And so, that's my lazy and lazier dungeon design.
I don't think that's tactics. I don't think that's lazy.
I think, Jeff, I know I'll obviously let you go here. I think that dungeons should be simpler than sometimes as DMs we make them, because exactly how you just described, Nicole, that is an excellent and fail-proof formula. And sometimes I think, because I know I have, you get lost in trying to reinvent the wheel, and sometimes you just need to go back to the classics, you know, and you can tweak it and, you know, all that stuff, but you can never go wrong with that format.
Yeah.
It's a classic and it works.
It is. Yeah, I mean, that's like, yeah, there's so many, what is it, the saying, like, don't fix what isn't broken, you know, some things just work, you know? When I'm designing them, I take a lot of my, like, DMing and world building and stuff like that from Legend of Zelda. As a GM, there's so much that you can take from all the Legend of Zelda games. So what I think of for a lot of my like dungeons, you can think of them as like temples. And I've straight up just told my players this too. Like, my campaigns are very like, they're very Legend of Zelda. So if you've played Ocarina of Time, for example, you know that there's different temples that you have to go to get the medallions to bring down Ganon's shield to his castle, right? But there's other stuff that you do during that. But the temples are all very floor-based. And so I kind of design when I'm thinking, okay, location for the dungeon. Where is the temple? Where physically is the dungeon? Or where, like, that we're designing. So if we're in a frost-themed, like if we're in like a cold area, the dungeon might have more like frost-themed puzzles and traps and different, like, instead of them being like stone, sometimes it's ice. So like from a design perspective, this isn't even mechanical. This is just theming to help you guys, like, you know, for listening, like, what can I do for theming? Take your environment that you're around and then use that to mold your dungeon, of course. But then I don't do the block system for my dungeons. I really think like big picture, then zoom in to my designs. So like I typically see it in my head. This would be really weird kind of to explain. Like I see the place that they're in and then I design it, like I zoom it in. So I'm like, okay, what would be on the first floor in where they're at? And then I'll try to replicate that as much. Like it was like, okay, like, is this a real place that would have people living in it multiple times or like over like months? So there'd be a kitchen, there'd be all sorts of stuff. So I'm thinking like, okay, is it just a quick, like, they just popped it up, so there's just ruins there, or not ruins, but like just nothing there and just bare scraps? If there's a second or third floor, what are they made of? Why is there a second or third floor and what's up there? And I think about it from seeing it from the big picture of like what building or structure that they're in. And then I zoom into it, where I know some people look at the dungeon first and then zoom out. But yeah, I guess that could be a thing for life too. Big picture, then zoom in. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
The trees.
Anyways, yeah, that's kind of what I do. And I'll be honest, I use ChatGPT for like a lot of my fillers. Like I have like my main topics and things that I want in the dungeon, and then I just go to my ChatGPT that has my, I do pay for it, so it like has like my like memory of my campaign, and I only do my one campaign. Like I only talk to the one tab about my campaign, so it knows all of the history of it. So it's like, hey, what's in this room? And it spits out lore accurate stuff for my world. And
that's dope.
Yeah, it's awesome. I talked about this at BirdQuest. It's awesome, especially like as you train it more, your small details become suddenly meaningful with it without you even have to think about it. It's awesome.
Yeah, I love that. I'm definitely not against using tools like that and using like
only AI for the small details, not the big details. Only the small details. Yeah. The small items that are in the corners of dungeons that I don't give a shit about. Like,
so this is interesting. You know, as I was thinking about this leading up, dungeons hilariously are something that I am like extremely lacking in. I don't think that I, for whatever reason, think about them or present them that often in my games, which like is kind of funny thinking about that now. But it's interesting because what I've, if I can form thoughts into words here, I think the most important thing for me is, especially in my homebrew world, is I always want to answer the question first of like, why is this here? Whatever this dungeon is, whether it's, you know, your classic, you're going underground and it's a true, you know, dungeon, or whether it's a building that you kind of utilize as a quote unquote dungeon crawl, or whether it's anything else like that, I always try to answer that question first, which I think largely is kind of what Jeff is describing too, of taking the environment that it's in and kind of answering the question of why. The first real dungeon crawl I ever did, and I've run it several times since, is the oh Lord, I just lost the name. It's from Matt Coville's How to Run a Game videos that, you know, are probably 15 years old at this point. Mm-hmm. And that tomb is there because it was a group of paladins that have long since, you know, left. And so I always try to do that. I think it's fun to have them ancient like that, but always tie it into the lore or have a history. You know, I think it's weird to have just a random spot on the map. Mm-hmm. Skyrim is one of my absolute favorite games all time. And so that is often the lens that I plan my dungeons through. I love in Skyrim how it's kind of the circle that you kind of always pop back out the secret entrance back into the entryway. Mm-hmm. Especially for bigger dungeons, so you're not having to have your players go back through everything, because I always find that a little clunky. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't always love doing the, like, yeah, you guys leave, you know, the descent took you 3 hours, but yeah, you guys make your way back out. You know, there's nothing wrong with that, that's perfectly fine, but I do kind of like to have, if you can find that balance between having them be linear while still that's not railroading your players, you know.
Yeah, that's the movie approach.
Yeah. Exactly.
Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that.
There's not. There's not. And I've not always done that, but I think it's fun. But that to me is the big thing of always make it feel that it is a part of the world and not like a separate, hey guys, we're going underground, you're doing a dungeon crawl all of a sudden. You know, if it's a one shot, sure, you know, whatever. Yeah. You don't have to have reasons, but so I use mine a lot for artifacts, or in my world, there's a lot with scripts and texts and things that are all kind of pointing to one story. And so I'll have those kind of spread out throughout the world. So I'll use like runes and emblems and things that are carved into stone that kind of denote like, hey, all these are interconnected one way or the other, and they're still putting the pieces together. So I don't want to say too much on that. But I think that's fun too, to have this feeling of this ancient civilization, or perhaps it's an ancient civilization that is now inhabited by something else, or again, it could literally be a tavern. You can use taverns and buildings and towns as dungeons. It doesn't have to be a true quote-unquote dungeon, you know. But it is something that genuinely this it's kind of inspired me to, like, I really want to be more inventive with mine and make them a bit more unique and just use them more. It's funny how much I've underutilized it's literally in the name of the game, you know. Okay. And it's not something I've done a ton with, but that's so fun. I mean, as is true with anything in D&D, the possibilities are endless, you know. Mm-hmm. But don't overthink it. I think that's, I really like, you know, give it a reason for being there. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's 5 steps or maybe it's 10 steps, you know, 10 whatever. Just don't overcomplicate it to the point that it's hard to track or hard for your players to keep track of, and you know.
It's so funny. I feel like Skyrim is such a good, like, I don't know, such a good reference, I guess, for D&D games. I feel like that comes up so often in my mind. And the first DM that I ever had when I started playing D&D, like, literally we'd be like asking her, like, oh, what does this look like? And she'd be like, well, you know, like in Skyrim, when you go to this city and the architecture is kind of like this, it looks like that. And then we'd be like, oh yeah, yeah. Okay. We're there.
That's one of the best ways to do it, is just take something that everyone knows and just say, it looks like that.
Yeah.
And then your brain will just naturally adopt what the GM has kind of flavor textured in there. And it's amazing. And you'll just change that perspective in your brain just a little bit, just by having just a slight little change.
Here's something else that I've started to do, and I will dive into this more later, but my Tales of Harbor Light story that I'm developing to play with my wife and my 2 children, each settlement I'm kind of having be a theme. So like in this story, the main town of Harbor Light, its theme is kind of like slowing down and respectfulness and being at peace. And I'm having different locations represent different things. Some might be solitude, some might be perseverance. But with dungeons, that could also be true. You could have dungeons kind of be tied and represented to an emotion. You could do the 7 deadly sins, you know. You could have a dungeon that's 7 rooms and each one could be represented, or you could have 7 separate dungeons. So I think it's not only that it can be a environmental theme or tied to a faction or being, but I think it can also, you can use those things as tools to try to evoke a specific emotion or convey a specific emotion. When I DM for my children, and it's, I mean, it's true of just parents, you always are trying to instill those values and lessons in them, and not necessarily, you know, it's like getting them to eat their vegetables. Sometimes you got to sneak them into stuff, you know? And so I think that's really fun. And it's true of players too. You know, I think D&D for me and for most people is a form of therapy, sometimes writing it and having these themes and things sometimes really have helped me process some of my emotions, even if it's not something that ever ends up on the table. Just sometimes writing those stories and building out these worlds sometimes really helps put things back into perspective and helps you realize what is important in life. But anyway, to put a bow on that, I think really be creative when you are planning the theme for a dungeon. You know, I think it's really fun to kind of play with the multi-layered and levels of what you can kind of do and evoke at the table.
Yeah.
I'm obsessed with this campaign that you keep, like, hinting at. I'm like, it just feels so, like, wholesome and homey and cozy, and I love it, and I don't know. I don't know if I want to like move into your household and play in the campaign, or if I want to steal it from you, or if I want to try to convince you to like write an expansion for Adventures in Etheria based on this campaign.
That would be pretty cool.
I haven't decided yet, but like at least one of those three things is going to happen because I love it so much.
The table's always open. It is. I would just encourage you if you have the great benefit of having people in your life whom you really and who love you dearly, and you all share things like the love of playing games together. If you ever have the opportunity to write something specifically for your family, it has been, we haven't even started it yet, and it has already been one of the greatest joys of my life. And it genuinely is going to be the best. And I know all kind of building the world together. I think it's right here. Like, they're working for post service, and like I sent, I actually letters from the NPCs that they will know. So I got to send them out to the mailbox, and they got to bring in the mail that has their character's name and it's, you know.
Oh, that's cool.
And so find the things that you guys love and enjoy, and make that D&D. And that can be true for just your players that you have now. Find things that resonate with you. It doesn't have to be the hopefulness or the peacefulness, you know, whatever it is. Just do things that inspire you, man. Just do things that fuel your fire. And just have fun. Just have fun.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
Man, and there is no better way to end an episode than that way right there. Just have fun. Let's go ahead, roll a D100, see what we get. I have the D100 table pulled here.
All right, let me grab some.
Would like to,
Jared, you
roll for us. Ooh, nice Gen Con shirt, bro.
Hey, thank you. Yeah, represent Gen Con.
Oh, that's cute.
Sorry, I'm trying. My percentile die are, you know, naturally right behind my screen. All right, again, thank you, Charlie. Thank you, GM, for sending me this set of dice. Let's roll 2d10s here and see what we get. That is a 48. 48.
48.
48.
Dealing with metagamers.
Oh, somebody's going to go on a rant. It's not going to be me. Yeah, probably.
It's a fun topic. I'm actually super excited to talk about that. That's exciting.
Dealing with metagamers.
That is exciting. Well, also, just real quick, totally unrelated to D&D, but related to Charlie and his lovely wife, he sent me some beautiful Swifty bracelets. His wife made this one, and I love that so much. It makes me so happy. Charlie and I are Swifties together. Oh, and there's his awesome sticker. He does have really dope stickers and coasters and
I'll do all this stuff.
Merch.
Boom.
Ink GM merch is the best merch around.
So much. So indeed. Much of his stuff.
Mm-hmm. Charlie's so the coolest. Charlie, I miss you.
Charlie is.
Get well soon. Thank you all for listening. Use code StoryCrafters at FirelightFables.com for 15% off. And stay classy.
San Diego.
San Diego. I feel like now we're gonna get copyright infringement. I'm Ron Burgundy. I don't know what to do with my hands.
Rick, where'd you get a hand grenade?
All right. Oh, guys.